Welcome to this first episode in English here in the Yoga auf Deutsch podcast. So this is a reminder that the name has nothing to do with the language, but with the expression, tell me what it means in German, which means in Germany, tell me what it really is about. Here we speak about female entrepreneurship, yoga, culture, and holistic well-being. My guest today is Adrienne, a friend and colleague, and without further ado, let's dive in the first English episode. Adrienne, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you in my own podcast. Our listeners have to know, of course, that you have your own podcast where I had the honor to be a guest, and now I'm more than happy to have you here. Welcome, Adrienne. Please tell us, who are you and how did you get to what you're doing today?
Dankeschön, Stephanie. I hope I said that correctly, but
yes.
Thank you so much. Yay. I'm thrilled to be your very first guest in English, and it honored me to hear you call me a friend and a colleague. I think the same of you. I felt connected to you from the very beginning. I can't even remember how we met now. You know how things get weird like that? It feels like I've known you forever. And I... What was the first question? I just wanted to make sure you knew how happy I was to be here. What was the first question?
Yes, who are you? Anything you want to tell us about yourself?
Yes, okay. My name is Adrienne. I'm a Washington, D.C. native who has lived in Europe since, when I think about it, 2002, actually. And that just blows my mind how fast time goes. First, I did a stint in England, Belgium, and I'm in Sweden now. Have been here since 2006. I met my Swede when I was in Belgium. So I am, I guess what you would call an American expat, but I have always maintained very, very close ties to the US. My family is there. You know, my childhood and lifelong friends are there. And I have become an overseas voter advocate. Now that is another hat I wear in to the yoga, but it keeps me tied to the US, and I am looking forward to voting in the EU elections actually that are coming up. We vote in Sweden, I believe, in June. So I've got my ballot for that. So I guess I'm a global citizen, something like Stephanie, who has a connection to Mexico, who's fluent in Spanish, who has done a lot of traveling and respects different cultures. I think that's another reason that we love each other, because we have a tremendous respect for different cultures, people of all kinds. I don't think there's anyone that we could meet with a good soul that we could bond with, regardless of where they're from. So that's who I am in a nutshell. And what I do, I guess, is, well, maybe I'm a I'm a yogipreneur. Let me make sure that I claim that. I am a yogipreneur, right? I have to claim it. And I guess that's kind of new to me, because I've had my certification since the end of December 2023. And when I got that certification, it was for myself, not to be a teacher, but to embrace everything that I was learning. I turned to yoga after my father died in May of 2021. Gosh, we're coming up on our anniversary. And I had found yoga before. You know what? I can say that I'm also a sexual assault survivor and someone who manages your PTS with the D in parentheses. So that's part of who I am as well. I can't say that that's not true. So I turned to yoga initially after trauma connected to a sexual assault that had physical trauma as well, because I had to go out of a window to get out of that situation. But that was like in 1996. So I embraced yoga instinctively then. And so when my father died 3 years ago, I like to say I ran back to yoga like a lover, you know, and she welcomed me with open arms. And I instinctively knew that that was going to help me my grief. And because of that, I poured myself into the training, the yoga teacher training, because I realized I need to be able to do this on my own, on demand. I was in such an emotional state. This is when all classes were online. Thank goodness for that for me. I can get into more of that later. But if there was the least bit of technical difficulties or something went wrong, that would just put me in tears. And I said, you know what? This is really feeding my soul. So I need to be able to do it on my own. So I took training, and it was a mentor who said, okay, you've done your training. Now I want you to get the specialized training with Veterans Yoga Project so that you can substitute for me. And that was even more, they call it mindful resilience training, resiliency training. Back to who I am. Okay, I'm going to abbreviate this. I'm a daughter of a veteran. My dad was a World War II veteran, spouse of a recently retired Swedish military officer. So I embrace Veterans Yoga Project. They offer classes for free online and in person. I would take five classes a day sometimes. Definitely take classes 7 days a week. And that's when I discovered that it's going to help me manage my grief. And it still does. It doesn't erase grief. Grief is different for everyone. So in my case, it doesn't keep me from grieving, but it makes it manageable because it had gotten out of hand. I had a horrible rash on my body. I had to go to the doctor twice. I had was literally pulling my hair out. I mean, I had like a, what would you call, like a horseshoe shape of the crown of my head, and I could see myself pulling my hair out, and I just couldn't do it. So it was my anxiety and grief were over the top with mild depression. So I took the yoga for depression. I took the yoga for anxiety. I took the yoga for grief. You know, I took the yin yoga, the restorative yoga, the yoga nidra certification. You know, I did all of that, and little by little, I was able to put myself back together. And that's why I know it works. Now, that's not the whole part of it, but when I was doing those practices and learning, I said, this is going to keep me sane. And that's what I try to do for other people, offer them those same tools that I learned. I call them mindfulness tools because, you know, with yoga, it's not just the movement. A lot of people think it's just what you do with your body, but it's not just what we do with our body, yoga, which is a blessing. Because you don't have to feel as if, oh, I'm not flexible. I mean, I've been in classes with veterans that are missing limbs or have a traumatic brain injury. So yoga isn't just about the physical body. You know that as well. I'm sure you've talked about it in German. It's not just about the physical body, it's about the whole body and the whole spirit. And putting all these tools together helped me become whole. I don't ever want to say I won't be whole again, but put me enough together where I could function. And I hope that doesn't sound dramatic, but I just wasn't functioning. Wasn't eating properly, wasn't sleeping properly. My blood pressure still isn't where it should be. And maybe it won't be again without medication, but I'm working towards that. You know, the medication is the last thing that I want to take. But at the same time, anyone listening, don't mess around with your blood pressure. Work with your doctor to manage it, because if that gets out of hand, it can have detrimental effects to your health. I'm aware of that. But I do believe that I have power. We have the power within ourselves to heal. Heal can seem like a strong word, but to normalize, to put ourselves back in. It's a constant state of working towards this. And I try to work on it a little bit every day. And when I see myself not doing well, I have that power or that, well, I have that power. We all have the power, but I have the tools that I can step back, take a breath, maybe just do a 15-minute practice, maybe just go into, you know, resting pose, just breathe, even just calm down, close my eyes, and just take that minute to step back. And that's one thing I've learned from yoga.
Thank you so much for this introduction and for your openness, for being vulnerable. And I need to say, I learned that we have another thing in common I didn't know. And this is me too. I am a survivor of sexual abuse and I'm suffering PTSD from that. And of course, yoga helped me so much to deal with it and yeah, to get back into my body. And there's a lot of grief for me as well. I'm grieving the years I've lost on that, my youth, so to say. And yes, I really liked what you said, and thank you so much for the cultural shout out.
And you know what, Stephanie? Thank you, and you're welcome. I'm so sorry we shared that together, but thanks for letting me know. And it was years before I could speak about it, but I talk about it now, just like you let me know. You know what, it happened to me too. You're not alone. Someone else will hear that. I'm not sure when this episode will air, but I think every year, maybe for the last 20 or so years, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And April 24th in particular is Denim Day, where it's called that because there was an Italian Supreme Court that overturned a rape conviction because they said the victim was wearing tight jeans and she must have helped the man get them off of her. So it couldn't have been rape, which is completely ridiculous. So yeah, shout out to all the, and thank you also for mentioning that grief isn't just loss. Like you say, the loss that you have of your autonomy when you're raped, when you have a sexual assault, the loss of innocence. First time it happened to me, I was 16. Like you say, the loss of childhood or your teen years, the loss of trust, in other people. So grief can encompass actual death, of course, of a loved one, of a pet, loss of a job, surviving sexual assault, moving a lot is a loss, divorce. Grief can come in lots of shapes and sizes, and yoga is can help. The whole tenets of yoga, the whole eight limbs, the whole part of it can help you navigate these really, really difficult stages in life. So, all right, sister, we're bonded in another way, not the happiest way, but on the other side of that, look at what we've done with that and how we've been able to turn that around. And yeah, PTS is real. And like I said, in parentheses, because one thing that I learned from the Veterans Yoga Project is we don't like to use the word disorder because it's the way your body and mind is reacting to that trauma is not a disorder. There's nothing
Sure.
wrong with you. It's nothing. So if we put that in the D, it's kind of, it puts it in perspective because you don't want to walk around with, because some people are afraid to say, I have a disorder. It can be so stigmatized. But if you have PTSD, you're not alone, and yoga can definitely help. And one thing I learned in my yoga nidra training is that it helps veterans and a lot of other people with PTSD get sleep. Some people can't sleep at all. I don't know if you went through that, where it took a long time before you could get your sleeping patterns back, before you even wanted to close your eyes, feel safe. So it can help. Yoga nidra can help you get rest. If it doesn't help you get a full night's sleep, it can help you get rest. And the rest can be so profound and on such a deep level that it can equate hours of sleep, even if you maybe are just out for 4 hours. Or maybe not even out at all, but if you take that hour, depending on how long your yoga system is, this session is, I should say, turn and shut down your nervous system, shut down that fight or flight, even for 60 minutes can provide wonders for your body. And I have a lot of students to say, they come out feeling refreshed. I'll confess, if I am listening to a yoga nidra, if I'm in a class, I'm out usually in the first 10, 15 minutes. I wake up, it's over, either the next day or hours later. And I'm so grateful for that rest because my body needed that. So sometimes you'll hear, don't sleep in yoga nidra, pay attention. Yes, but if you find yourself, what happened? I woke up and it's over. Have compassion and thank yourself for giving your body that rest that you needed. Maybe as you build your practice, you won't fall asleep, maybe not immediately, but I always fall asleep. So I think that's my body That's a signal to me that I'm not necessarily getting the rest I need all the time. So I try to build in yoga nidra like at least a week to make sure that I get that rest. I say that, but it's a goal. It's a goal. I'm not there yet, but that's a
Yeah,
goal. I'm
it's a goal.
talking to
I
you.
do it. I try to do it every day, and I
Oh,
just have
fantastic.
the same experience. And it was not really yoga that brought me to yoga nidra. It really sounds so funny, doesn't it? It was Ayurveda, because when I was grieving, I got to a Ayurveda practitioner, and she told me, "Did you ever heard of yoga nidra?" And I was just in my first yoga teacher training. I was like, "No, what's this?" And I really love it. I'm doing it now for years, and it really helps.
You know, I didn't know what it was called either until I actually, okay, yeah, I was taking all those Veterans Yoga Project classes. Like I said, I was taking it from, what was the first one? Maybe 9 in the morning. And then I saw something on the evening schedule, 9 o'clock, said Yoga Nidra, signing up. Didn't know what to expect, thinking it was going to be a class that involved movement. And when I found out it wasn't, that it was like a deep meditation, I thought, oh my gosh, this is what I loved about my very, very, very first yoga class in 1996 when I had trauma in my back after the attempted sexual assault. At the end of the class, the teacher would use an abbreviated, now I know, yoga nidra. I don't know how long, yeah, because the class was an hour, but she would take us, and the way I would describe it, she would take us to this wonderful place. I knew I was out of my body. And then I could just remember when she would bring you back into the class. You know, you hear the teacher say, you know, come back into the class with it. And I'm like, no, like, what is that? So I was like, when I did my first, I was like, that's what it is, yoga nidra. So I said, I've got to get certified. I have to take more classes. And I always try to include at least a 10-minute guided rest, or not even so much guided, but time for people to rest at least 10 minutes after a movement practice, because it really is that time where you can just leave your body. You know, we encourage people to do that when you're doing breath work, but after you've done the meditation and the breath work and the movement in your practice, and when you come down and you're in that final, I truly believe it, it's that time, it's that last gift you can give yourself before you have to go on with the rest of your day. Because once you come back from that place, you're like, wow, you could, for me, it's a different perspective. It's like, wow, I know I can go, like,
Yes.
there's this magic place, you know, that you can get to, and we can take ourselves there anytime. And that's another reminder, because I have had so many times over the last couple of years where I just have lost my cool, just have not handled things the way that I would want. If my grandmothers, for example, were observing, for them to see me behave. And I know that, okay, you didn't step back, you didn't breathe, you didn't go to that magical place. I know in eye rest, which is Miller's version of yoga nidra, which is particularly effective with veterans, because that's what he specialized on and had a lot of scientific research. One of the things is to, oh, I'm not going to remember, what's it called? See, what's the term, but I can describe it. It is that place that you have internally that you can visualize, where I can just close my eyes and breathe, and boom, I'm transported to my place. Is it in a forest? Is it on a beach? What is that? I'm going to think of a tool, it'll come to me, but it's one of the steps you go through with. I'm not trained or certified in eye rest. That's a different certification to get. But that's one of the things that he teaches you before he takes you through a full rest yoga nidra practice. It's your internal, I'm going to think of it, but I try to incorporate that in my meditations if I do a guided visual, because everyone has that place. It could be fantasy, it could be a place you've been, a place from your childhood, someplace you've read about, you've seen in a picture. Like, I've never been to Tahiti. But it makes me happy if I close my eyes and picture myself in what I think is Tahiti. You know, that can calm me down. And I try to use that instead of suggesting imagery, because we don't know what's going to maybe trigger someone or bring up a bad memory. You know, if you say, picture yourself on a lake, Well, I remember I used to be scared of getting on a lake and on a lake for years after me and one of my best friends tipped over in camp in the in a lake. And I yeah, that was so, you know, I don't necessarily want to say go to the mountain, go to the beach, go, you know, you go to that place of nature that makes you feel calm. And everybody has a different place. Some people might be a winter scene. You know, there's some people that live in tropical places. They don't want to picture the beach, right? They want to picture something else. So having that tool, I didn't activate it enough over the last couple of years. I forgot that I could just step back, even go to the toilet, excuse yourself from that situation where you're having a meltdown, breathe, go to that place. And you know, by the time you come back, maybe the situation's changed. Maybe that person's calmed down as well, or you can start over. So that's one of the things that with the grief, the yoga for grief, the tools, not just grief, but any stressful situation, they come in handy. And some of the poses, I know you wanted me to mention some of the poses for it. You can even excuse yourself and go do that for maybe a couple of minutes and feel better. I've done that. Gone and gotten to child's pose, where you know you may start on all fours, on your hands and knees, and then sit back on your heels, your buttocks on your heels, maybe having something in between your buttocks and your heels if that's more comfortable. And with your palms stretched out in front of you, or maybe you want them by your side with palms up. Or even I like prayer position behind my head, because it seems like that's the only time I feel anything here in my triceps. And just breathing there for a few minutes can be powerful and calming. And when you think about it, sometimes children instinctively know how to calm themselves down. Maybe that's why it's called child's pose. They instinctively know how to calm themselves down and just take a break. And it's definitely a universal signal. Or an accepted pose in any yoga class, whatever. If you can't follow up, don't want to do what's going on, don't want to be offered, you can always go in child's pose and catch up. But I've learned if something is too intense in my household, I can go to child's pose and come back and feel better.
Yeah, I
So.
always need to think on kind of a seat. For me, it would be also a very fitting word to call it a seat position because you're there like a little kind of ball, your arm stretched out like a plant that is just up to rise, to grow. So, because I think when we have this thought, if something is not working well for you, can come to child's pose. And this is not about how we call this pose. I mean, we're not talking Sanskrit anyway here. So it doesn't matter how we call it. But I really think it's like, oh, if something is bad, you come to this pose. But I think if we come more with the mindset of this is a pose that helps me for my growth, I think it really changes a bit of narrative. But yeah, now I really touched with the.
No, absolutely. And you know, in Veterans Yoga, the Veterans Yoga Project, they taught us to call that pose wisdom pose.
Yeah, I like that.
Don't you, I like that too. So that wisdom pose. So to me that means a lot. I have the wisdom to get in that pose. I can get some wisdom when I'm in that pose. That pose I take because class is either too heavy or life is too heavy, or it's just supposed to go and think. And get some wisdom. Like you say, it doesn't have to be anything wrong. I don't have to be crisis. I can just take that pose and it helps you get in touch with your body, breathing through your back. You know, your lungs are expanded, your head is down. You've got, you know, you can rub your forehead, get that tactile feeling, that gentle massage. You know, there's so many benefits, you know, not to mention how you are, you know, stretching your spine or your thighs or your ankles. We hardly pay attention to our ankles, right? So it's a lot going on with that. So all of that I discovered with, I think first unwittingly, when I first discovered yoga and yoga nidra, didn't know what it was. And then purposefully when I decided to take my training. And I love that you found things through Ayurveda. That's part of my training too.
Yeah.
And I hope to go deeper into it.
Yeah, I think purpose is just the right word because for me, like what is what connects everything is culture, and I really think we need to see our cultures purposefully. So what we just said right at the beginning, and you mentioned that I have some connections due to my boyfriend to Mexico, which is a huge inspiration for me because I really try to connect with my heritage, with my ancestors. But here in Germany, it's like no one really cares about our ancestors. Maybe we talk about Second World War, but hell no, this is not my ancestry. Like I know what like my people did, my grandparents did or didn't, but this is just like the surface. This is just one glimpse of history, but I want to go deeper. I really want to connect with what, I mean, you live in Sweden, we are closer to that, but what we know is paganism, like what was before we had Christianity. And for me, a really, really big life goal is decolonization. So I really love to get inspired by other cultures, if it is yoga or if it's Mexican cultures. I really love to know more about indigenous cultures, and I'm so lucky to have indigenous friends which are really open to share with me their cultures, to learn about it. And then I realized like nothing is the same, but like the concepts in the world are repeating, and they're repeating for, let's say, indigenous cultures. And I please don't blame me on using this word. It's just in lack of or not knowing a better one for describing this. But let's say for people who are living more connected to nature, more connected to spirituality than religion. And this is what I really love and embrace, and what I want to get back for myself. So first we spoke about grief, and to be honest, it's a thing I'm also grieving. I'm grieving that my culture is so disconnected. We're disconnected from everything. And we had this talk when we said, well, it's not a disease, right? It's PTS, not PTSD. And this really made me think about it. In the Western world, we have for everything a term, and we want to categorize everything. So for me, a big eureka moment was when I realized where this is coming from, and without blaming anybody, but before the Romans took over here, we didn't have these kind of concepts, at least not that much. So when I really get back into my own history, let's say 2000, 2500 years maybe, I really would say we had what we nowadays call indigenous culture. So reconnecting with my own ancestry, with my own people, with my heritage, for me is a lot of looking what other cultures, quote unquote indigenous cultures, are doing today. And if we have a look like where yoga is coming from and the ideas and the philosophy, I really was stunned, like how many things are repeating, and like I said, it's never the same. But this really made me going back a bit from calling myself I am only, quote unquote, only a yoga teacher, because I realized that it's not only yoga. Yoga is a beautiful way, it's a beautiful way to connect with our bodies, with our soul, to get more into philosophy, into spirituality. But I mean, let's be honest, it's not part of our culture. We both are yoga teachers, but it's not part of our cultures. So I am really aware of this whole debate on cultural appropriation. And when,
You know,
yeah.
Stephanie, I have to add, because there is something called, and I'm not sure if you're aware of it, Medic yoga
Yes.
that stems from Egypt, ancient Egypt. And if you look at hieroglyphs, I don't know if these things were happening parallel, even though I am from the African diaspora. I'm not an Egyptian, but Egypt is in Africa. So it was on the continent. Perhaps it's the same time as happening in Asia, where India is. I haven't studied it. I know I'm aware of it. I have taken a class where a teacher put some moves in, and I was like, whoa, this looks like hieroglyphs. This is, and she said something to Ra, and I was like, okay, what's happening? I need to look into this. And then I discovered that Kemetic yoga is a thing. So I understand what you're saying about cultural appropriation. I still feel weird if I were going to use Sanskrit. Because I don't understand, the other words, and I have a teacher, and I really think if it's going to be accessible, I don't even need to say downward dog. I just need to cue you into
Yes.
that move, because if it's your first time and I say downward dog, you're spending more time looking at everyone else you're trying to figure out than listening to your body and seeing, getting in touch with that. So I love what you say about that. I want to get more into the medic to know about it, but and you know about narratives and dialogues. I don't, there is, I don't want to say we've been brown people because Indian people are brown. I don't want to say African people have been written out of this. I don't know. That's a discussion for a kinetic yoga expert. But I just wanted to bring that up because I think it was happening in Africa at the same time in Asia. Those, what's been happening on those continents, old. So I don't know. Something you said, I didn't want to cut you off, but you reminded me when I was at Yoga Games, which is this big exhibition and weekend of yoga around Sweden. I bought some Mayan cocoa. There was a ceremonial cocoa. I don't know if you've experienced it, but like the
Yes, last
woman,
time
she was
I
telling
went to
me.
Mexico this year, I brought, well, we, I mean, I, this is really a huge point for me. So nice that you're touching on that. I'm really against calling it cacao ceremony. And this also has to do with, yes, like, kind of mentor I have, and I took a course with her, and it was decolonizing cacao. So for me, this really was eye-opening. And as a cultural anthropologist, I was super hyped to get into this knowledge. And as a private person, I just loved it because I love plants. Plants are my kind of medicine. And I really love to work with plants, but I think we have to be aware. So if I'm using cacao, it's nothing that's part of my cultural heritage. And of course, I can use it. I can have it. I can consume it. I can heal with it. But I think we need to be very careful with terminology and transparency. And yes, but it's a great plant. I really, really love it.
I can't, I don't have it on me, the name of the company, but it was a Mayan sister who was, and I said, you're based here. She's there outside of Stockholm. And she told me how it had been used anciently by her ancestors. And she said, we offer a monthly meditation. I don't know when, what it's related to. And she said, she makes it part of her morning routine and then meditates after and blah, blah, blah. So I bought it home. One of the reasons I picked it up, because when they listed all the benefits, it was lower blood pressure. And I said, okay. Like you say, you love plants. I'm looking for a holistic way to, lower my blood pressure before I get forced on meds, medications. So I said, okay. So that was a couple of weekends ago. It's home. I haven't opened it. I haven't taken the time to really read it. Because she took a lot of time to, but just basically, like, don't just drink it like hot chocolate, she wanted me to be more thoughtful about it. So I want to see what the meditations they're offering, see, because I believe in the power of a morning routine. I need to revamp my morning routine. I remember when I was at the beginning of the pandemic, I had really developed a strong morning routine where I would wake up and put on meditation music before I even got out of bed, and then lay there and do some breathing. My days would be great. I would come up with all these great ideas during that
Yeah,
period. I
I
don't know.
love it. Like in December it was, and I was in Mexico with my boyfriend, with his family, and we did our own end of the year goodbye ritual. I don't know what's the great term. We just came together. It was my boyfriend, his sister, a friend, and myself, and of course the parents. So What we did was a bit of kind of journaling, you know, so like setting goals and what went good the last year, what wasn't, what we wish for the next year. And one of the things we did is we were around a fire, we burned what we want to release, and then we had a cup of cacao, and it was ceremonial cacao, and it was the first time I had the pleasure to really consume real cacao, not this hot chocolate thing we usually buy here in Europe. And I was like, wow, like I've never been high in my life. I never consumed drugs, but this was what I really was like, wow, this is really working. And
That's what she said. She
yes, as I'm
said,
suffering from chronic fatigue, I'm really used to be tired all the time, super exhausted, and I had a cup of that, and it was like 2 in the morning, still up, and like, oh my God, I feel so good. I love life. So I really made it a part of my day. I tried to have like maybe just like an espresso cup full. I'm like a shot, and I'm not using the ceremonial cacao because what I've learned, it's like really special and needs to be planted with intention and so on. But I have the raw cacao powder, and I have raw cacao, like the it looks like a block of chocolate, but it's not chocolate, it's just the cacao.
You
Yeah,
scrape it off.
yes, exactly. And I'm consuming this now for what we have April, so about 4 months now, every day, and I feel so much better, really. So it's a great plant. I love to use it, but
Wow.
I love to use it also with my mind. No, not just I want it, I want need to consume it. So for me, it's really, really important to know where is it coming from, and at least to pay the people a price that it's helping them, and not just, oh, I want the cheap things. Because the thing is, and I think this is a real big thing, at least here in our Western European Eurocentric world, it's like we want everything and we want it cheap, but we really lost to look for what is good for us, good for our health. And usually the very cheap things, at least the produced very cheap things, aren't. I mean, it's also cheap to yesterday I went outside to get some nettle. I mean, this didn't cost me anything. I just said thank you to nature. But I mean, this also can be really cheap in the sense of I didn't pay money. But I really think we need to go away from that. Oh, I want it cheap, and it doesn't matter where it's coming from. And I mean, I don't want to be like the person who's, you can't use that because it's from another culture, and then sitting there with my cacao. I mean, I'm using it myself. This is not the point. But I really think we need to understand where the things are coming from, what we can do to appreciate and not appropriate it. So when you said, and I know what you mean, I was thinking about the term as well, but it's not coming to my mind, the yoga nidra place, or the place where you can beam yourself up to be in this other parallel world. So for me, when I was a little child, I had a tipi. So don't ask me where it was coming
Stephanie,
from.
Stephanie, Stephanie, I'm sorry, before I forget, inner resource is
Inner
the term.
resource, yes, thank
Okay,
you.
so telling me about, okay, when you were a little girl, I'm sorry, it just popped in
Yes,
my head if I
so
didn't say it out loud, but when you were a little girl, I'm listening.
yeah, so one of my inner resources is the memory I have from being in this tipi. Like I said, please don't ask where it was coming from. It just was there. I have like nothing to do culturally, I mean, with Native American culture, but I had a tipi. Well, okay. So what I really loved was to just be in this tent, in this tipi. I mean, I don't want to call it really tipi. I mean, let's call it a tent. It was a tent in the shape of a tipi. This is really hard when you try to explain something. I
I
do my
know what a
best.
TP is. I don't know. I didn't know that you would know what a TP is, but I know what a TP is. I didn't know you would have that in Germany.
Yeah, we don't. This is why I say I have no idea where it was coming from, but it was there. But I really loved it in there. I remember that it was black. I think, as far as I know, this is not a typical color of a tipi, but well, and it smelled I don't know, but it smelled different than anything I knew until this point in my life. And I really loved to be in there. I felt whole. I felt, so to say, like in a womb. Even this might sound maybe crazy, but I really, really loved it in there.
That's neat, because if it was authentic, it probably made you feel all of those things, because I know it would be warm to protect in the winter, it would be cool for the heat, it would be the center of the family where everything went, handmade, what do you want to say, it was sustainable, whatever it was made from, if it was made from animal skin, that animal was used completely, the all of it.
I don't know if it was like this, quote unquote, traditionally made, but it just gave me a really, really, really nice feeling. And I mean, this is my inner resource. It's maybe it's more the feeling than really the tipi, but it was the surrounding. And as it was black, it was pretty dark in there. And I mean, when we do yoga nidra, it's nice to cover the eyes or to at least, I don't know, like be kind of in a darker room to also give some signals to the brain, okay, we're resting now. So I really think this is why it's reminding me on that. And I mean, it for sure like got me more into the, I want to know more about Native American culture, I think, like consciously. But it's so nice, know how it's all getting together. Like I had this experience, a tipi experience as a child without knowing anything about Native American culture, about cultural appropriation and all that stuff. And then when I grew older and I'm hopefully wiser, I got to all of these points and experiences to the point where I'm now, and I just love to learn more and to reconnect more with myself and with my own cultural heritage due to all these experiences, including yoga.
And I just love your story. I think I may have told you before, my mother is a PhD ethnomusicologist, and that's like an anthropologist through music. So she studied, and a book she wrote at the time was groundbreaking, teaching the music of six different cultures in the modern secondary school. And Native American music was part of that chapter. I remember Jewish music. I can't remember the other four. I'm sure African American. I don't know if she covered, well, probably all of her spirituals, gospels, to whatever the modern music was at the time. So I've always been exposed to different cultures through music in that way, with musical instruments from all over the world. We had a gong, from Japan. I can remember Kyoto from the Japan, that's what you call it. It's a string instrument that's long. You can sit on a board, drums from Africa that she would bought. Bring back from Ghana or Nigeria. We always have a Seder plate that my grandmother brought me back from the Holy Land. I mean, always was exposed to different cultures and always had a strong sense of pride about my own African American culture. Maybe again through my parents, through music. They met at Howard University as music majors. So I never felt weird about eating Jewish food or Mexican food or whatever, because, and not that you would either, but, or some people are like, oh, what is that? I don't want to try. I always had an open mind just for different cultures, thank goodness, because of my mother's profession, but also because both sets of my grandparents were world travelers. It would come back with gifts. I remember one time, oh, having my own, my grandmother bought me a kimono. I was 9 years old. I remember our family were on vacation in California. I remember going to Disneyland, and they were coming from Japan, and they met us there. And I remember having a 9-year-old size kimono. I can remember that and wanting to wear it all the time. You know how kids get something and you want to wear it all the time. So I wanted to wear it all the time. There would be sometimes my mother saying, no, you can't wear it. Maybe it was inappropriate or it was dirty. But I've always loved and embrace things from other cultures. I guess I was taught to respect them. I was exposed to them. And then my mother had the friends to match the culture, because when she was doing the research for her book, she went to the source, to the authorities, instead of trying to make up her own version. So I can remember Ruth Newhouse, one of the women, being in a house in the sun. So we were, I was lucky in that way. We were always exposed, my sister and I, always exposed to different cultures, primarily through music and then secondarily through food. And then maybe the food was coupled with the friendships my mother made as an ethnomusicologist, because people from all cultures want to feed you. Everyone's proud of their food. They love your food. If they come to your home, they bring you food. If you go to your house, they want to feed you. So I've always luckily not been. Now I will tell you, went on a trip to Hong Kong and we went to that famous market where people were eating insects and things like scorpions. Have not made that brave move yet, but I saw it, I watched it. I didn't say they're crazy. I thought, wow, okay. And I've seen the documentaries, in African cultures where they eat crickets or different sources of protein, and they have roasted,
Yeah, like
ahead.
grasshoppers and stuff like that. I mean, I'm telling my boyfriend all the time I would like to try chipolines, which is like basically grasshopper. And I mean, I don't eat meat. So, but I said I want to try it because I mean, it's something that's from your country. It's something I've never tried. And just for the cultural experience and to get a bit like closer to the culture of my boyfriend. I won't say that I will eat it afterwards on a daily basis. Maybe I will never try it again, but I really want to try it at least once.
Has he, is that something he enjoys periodically or when he's home? I don't know if you can get them in Germany, but because the reason I asked that, because in Sweden they have this, I'm not going to say it correctly, but up north in Sweden, there is this fermented fish that supposedly smells horrible.
Yes, I've heard
This
about that.
fermented fish. Okay. Now my boyfriend and his husband and family don't do it, thank goodness. So I've never been in a situation. I shouldn't say thank goodness, because maybe I like it. But I see, people hold their nose, they eat it. I've had people up north say you have to have certain onions, and when you do it, and if you close your eyes, it smells, it tastes great. I don't know if they're joking or if it's true. So I haven't tried a lot of things that are delicacies here because his family and they don't do it. I'll read about something. It's like, yeah. You read things, oh, traditionally. I'm like, not in my family. So, but I don't know if that's the same with your boyfriend's family. It's part of the culture, but maybe not part of his family's routine, or he enjoys those.
I mean, as far as I know, they're not consuming it on a regular basis. But if I understood it right, there are some family members that say, like, yes, it tastes good and it's like kind of a snack. But no, like in the time I've been there with my boyfriend, I haven't seen anyone like, oh, I just brought chipolines or like to have the chance to try it. But I mean, there are other things I had the pleasure to try. So when we were to Teotihuacan, maybe some people know like the pyramids there, they're quite famous. And I said I really want to try pulque. So pulque is made out of like nopal, the cactus, and it's fermented. So when you said like,
Okay, so it's a drink, it's an alcoholic drink.
yes, exactly. It's an alcoholic drink. And I mean, I need to say, because you said with the fish, it's like kind of weird, maybe, if you don't know it. I don't want to say disgusting because it's alimentation, it's food. And I always say food is never disgusting just because I don't like it. But like the consistency of how it feels of the pulque for me, it was a kind of like slimy. I was like, okay, I won't look at it if I drink it, and I can't see other people drinking it, but I really, really, really love the taste. But so the dad of my boyfriend, he knew a place where we can go, and this I really love this experience because we were just driving on this road and there was like nothing. We've been to Teotihuacan more in the evening, so it was beautiful, like the sun, the light, everything was coming to an end, the day was coming to an end, and with the pyramids, and it was just so magical, and you could really feel the energy of this place. And then it was just, he was stopping the car, and we were getting out, and there was this man sitting there, like kind of, yeah, like in the middle of nowhere, behind a pyramid somewhere. And within 5 seconds, he got us a table with chairs, and he was serving us pulque. I really love this experience. So I
Oh,
would
wow. Oh,
say,
yeah.
yeah, it's maybe more like the pulque that they really like and my boyfriend's family. But
See, that's the insider
enjoy,
experience.
you
That's
know,
not going
it's
to
not,
happen.
yeah, it's not like, oh, let's drink because we want to. No, this is just to enjoy. And you have like one glass of it and you enjoy this, and it's not to get drunk or anything. So I really liked it. And I need to say, half a liter of pulque is quite heavy for me. I'm not consuming a lot of alcohol. Like once in a while, maybe a beer, as I'm German, I have to drink beer, of course. No, just joking, but I like it. But I mean, for me, it was maybe a bit too much. But what I want to say, I like the taste, even though I didn't like how it was itself, and it's part of
The
my boyfriend's culture.
consistency,
Yeah, so I wanted to try it. And I mean, he is trying things he's not knowing here, and he's trying yoga. So we are open for all of these things, but always with transparency. Yes.
Well, good for you for getting your boyfriend to try yoga. I can't get my husband, not really. I remember I was so thrilled. It was like part of a team building or something, and he sent me a picture of someone had taken to him after yoga class, and I could see that it was outside. I thought, oh, they made it really nice. It was outside and people had their mats and they had their military exercise clothes on. And he's finally sat through and watched me teach a whole class. He was like, that was good. You know, I'm thinking, well, what did you think? You know, but you don't know. I can remember the first time I watched him give a lecture. He used to teach military history. And I remember thinking, gosh, that was good. And he was thinking, yeah, I mean, you know, that's what you do, but it's always good to see your partner doing something good. And we have been to the spa and done the sound therapy where you put the headphones on. He did that, and I can swear he enjoyed that. So baby steps. So maybe he, if you don't call, what I have found about human nature, if you call it the wrong thing, people won't want to do it. But you can call
Yes,
something good.
yes.
You know what I mean? The same exact thing and call it a different name, and they're all in for it. So
Yes,
I'm
yes.
gonna have to get my husband doing yoga without calling it yoga. I have to have it figured out with that. And if he complains about a bad back, so I know some stretches for you for that. So maybe I can ease
Exactly.
him through it that way because he knows I wanna, if he's suffering, you know, then I wanna ease his suffering. He's not wanna take pills. I don't think I've ever seen him take a pain pill. So maybe that would be the way. Because that's how I first found yoga. My back, as I say, was hurt. So I don't know, just intuitively that yoga was gonna help me, but I would have done it in the chiropractor. But if I would have, it wouldn't matter what I called it, I got the relief. So if I can say, look, let's just do some stuff for your back and don't do it in my regular yoga space. You do it someplace that he totally doesn't associate with it, it might work. And then the next thing you know, he'll be asking for it.
Yeah, I
I
think
can
this is
tell.
just the thing. You don't need to call it a certain way, and this is just what I meant right at the beginning. Like, I want to take a step back from calling it always yoga what I do, and I just want to do it. I just want to connect with nature. I just want to connect with myself. And if it's called yoga, if it's called whatever, it doesn't matter to me. I just want connection, I think. And I mean, this is what yoga is about as well. It's about connection. But in so many other cultures, we're striving for this as well. And I mean, living in, doesn't matter if you call it a clan or a tribe or a community or a nation, but we're human beings, and we seek some kind of connection.
You know, I don't know if I've read this recently or heard, but that seems to be the, at least the Western world's number one. I can't say we have so many problems in the Western world, but definitely one of the things that people can see on this side of the pandemic, the need for connection. People are desperate for it. Depending on where you were during the pandemic, we had a lot of freedom in Sweden. Some places were completely shut down. Some people felt cut off. I had been working from home for years. I felt like I was mentally and emotionally set up for the pandemic. That didn't bother me. I was in a safe space. Some people were trapped in spaces that weren't safe, you know, and going to work or school was their escape. But that connection, and I'm so glad that you mentioned that that's what yoga is, connection to yourself, you know, your mind, your body, your breath, within to nature. I think if everybody, and not everybody has green spaces around them, but I noticed that it's enough for me if I just go out my front door or my back door and get in, sit, stand on the grass or just sit out and see. If people can do that, you may not have a park, but what would you suggest? Plants in your house, bring some nature in if you can't get out to nature. And I think we have gotten away from that. And something that every indigenous culture has that connection to
Yes.
nature. Everyone does. All of them do. The respect for it, they know the need for it, the way to how it rejuvenates itself, how to take what you need, and rejuvenate. So I think that's something that's missing. I don't know if I get enough nature myself, and I'm promise myself I'm going to change this narrative I have been had with plants to give with plants so that I can have more of it on the inside of me. But like when you talk about grief in yoga, and yeah, sometimes if you're talking with somebody about grief and you're like yoga's going to help, that's the last thing. They're thinking how is I've never done yoga before. I don't feel like trying. So I call it grieve with grace, and I call it yoga work ins, because it's not about breaking a sweat, right? It's about working from within. It doesn't matter what you look like on the outside, right? A lot of times we put these masks on when we're grieving. I tried to be strong for my family. I know I wanted to. I had certain things that you have to do after you lose a parent. The legal and the economic and all those other. You're trying to be strong, but on the inside, I was a mess. But I realized, I had to work from the in out. So I try to call it, yoga for grief and work ins, and people try to think about it. But I do know that physical exercise is great for, and you know this, people that run or swim or lift weights, that's great for your mental well-being. What is it, the dopamines that come up? Like you say, you don't do drugs. If you get that high feeling after it. But the yoga with grief work-ins is not just your body. We do the meditation and the breath work and the movements and the guided rest, but also the journaling, and having a safe place where you can process these feelings, actually setting aside that time of the day or that week where you're going to take that for yourself just to work on your feelings. Learning to have patience with yourself, knowing that it's okay if this is hard, having patience with other people, learning how to set those boundaries. Because it can be a lot depending on your situation to take an hour for your household has to agree with you that that's going to happen, especially if you have kids. Mommy needs that time, daddy needs that time. Your household. Unless you live alone, your household has to provide that opportunity for you to have that quiet space, for you to
Yes.
be absent for an hour. So you have to set those boundaries and say, this is my time. Unless the house is on fire, do not bother me, right? During this time, I can take care of it after. I promise I'm coming back. You know where I am if there's a true crisis. But otherwise, and I have to do that. If I tell my husband I'm having yoga, great. Get to the point before we set up my space and he would even help me. Like, hey, aren't you doing yoga? Like his schedule was running around mine on that. But that's what, so when you grieve, you have to have those boundaries and maybe tell people, no, okay, I'm going to come to this holiday event, but I can only come an hour. That's my boundary because this is bringing up too many bad memories for me or I don't want to be here and bringing the party down when I start grieving, or be just to tell people no, or also to say, I need help and not to isolate yourself. So if you come into the space where you're doing the yoga with grief, you're not isolated, and at least I'm with you. If you choose to do it in a group with other people that are on that journey with you, maybe if you want to do it with your sister or whoever, because you're going through the same thing. But instead of just isolating yourself, feeling bad, feeling helpless, feeling hopeless, feeling like there's nothing that I can do, feeling like I'm never going to feel which can always often be where you are in the beginning of your grief story. Things are just never going to be the same. Well, that's true. I'm not going to tell you things are going to be the same again. They're not going to be the same. But I can say they can be manageable. Maybe they can even be better, you know, because I think, and one of my year three, of my grief journey, I don't know if things are going to be, I know they'll never be the same. But I know I have gone from being that person where I thought what I was going through was turning me into a supervillain. You know, I don't know if you, what's popular, Spider-Man,
Yeah.
Batman, you know, they always have a nemesis, a supervillain. I was like, we're going to look back and they're going to say, this is my backstory, like how I became. I never named my supervillain alter ego, which is good. I guess I stopped before I got to that point where I could actually see, oh, how, this is how she dresses, this is how she talks, this is her name, this is her superpower. But I was heading that way that I thought, because I was like a wild animal. I felt like a wounded wild animal, right? You do not want to go near a wounded wild animal. And that's what I felt like. I wasn't taking any crap from anybody. And I won't now anymore. Not that I think I ever did, but now I am very hypersensitive to anyone that may be trying to give me the slightest insult. Not so I could tear their eyes out. That's where I was before. But so that I can breathe, you know, take a step back, have that detachment. Is that personal? Is it not? Even if it is, so what? That's them, not me. You know, so you can have that. But I was spiraling in that other direction. So that's one of the things that all of these practices, I can write that feeling down. I can process that. I can go back later and see I'm not feeling that way anymore. Or maybe I'm stuck in a loop. What am I doing? What's working for me on the days where I feel great? I know I can look back over the last year. Last year was crap for me, I feel, and last summer. And when I look back, I still have this habit I developed in yoga teacher training where we had to log our hours of practice because there was a certain amount of practice hours that we had to do at the 200 level. So I still log every day and I can look back at the month. Okay, I was on the mat 48 times. I think it was one month I was on the mat 13 times. And maybe that sounds like a lot, but that wasn't for me. And I was like, that's why that month was crap. And it was crap. And it wasn't because I wasn't exercising. I wasn't taking that hour out for me, right? I wasn't even
Yeah.
taking that half an hour out for me. I wasn't doing any breath work. Because that's what I wasn't doing any journaling. Because all of that's incorporated to my time. And even if it's just 15 minutes where I may do some things, huge difference. So I could see that. So that's another reason I like to, and I have a gratitude journal. I don't think I entered it today. It's an app on my phone where I enter, and I think I have a 1400 day streak or something. And that has been a huge improvement in my just daily life, having a gratitude practice. And that can be hard to have when you're grieving because you think, what do I have to be grateful for? You know, you tend not to see the lighter things of life. Now, I'm lucky with my father that when he died, I had no regrets. Me and my family had no regrets. Meaning, okay, he was 95, but that we had done absolutely everything we could have done. So I didn't have one of those, oh, I wish I would have done, and I can, that would have been horrible. That would have intensified my grief so much. But I spent all the time I needed to do with him, maybe to the detriment of my marriage, to a certain degree, because you can't be in two places at the same time. I did everything with, you know, helping find the caregiver, making sure food was delivered, making sure my mother had everything she needed to support him and my sister, you know what I mean? I did everything that I could do. So when it was time to say goodbye, I didn't have any regrets. And I'm trying to make sure the same thing with my mother and my sister. And journaling can, what if you don't have that? Maybe someone dies or something happens and you wish could have done something different. You even blame yourself. Journaling can help you process that. That could be a very hard time when somebody can say, how can I be grateful for anything? I should have. There's always something to be grateful for. If you take the time to sit down and look at it, and it can be the trivial, because I read this, I can't take quote, I'm going to butcher the quote anyway, but I say I can't take credit for it. But I read something the other day, and what was it? If you don't, people that are healthy want a million different things, but people who are unhealthy only want one thing, and that's their health.
Yes,
So
my health is like the first value I have in my life, in my business. This is what everything is about.
everything. And if you can remember that in your gratitude practice, when you're in the darkest of days, if you've got your health, that is the number one thing to be grateful for in your darkest of days. And that's one thing that I let my grief almost take away from me, my health, right? It can do that. So if you put it in perspective, that can bring you back. And I think that's what's so important about a gratitude practice and why I make a gratitude practice part of my grieving protocol for myself. And when I work with clients, you've got to have, even if you take 5 minutes of gratitude, and I say, and I offer them, if you can't think of something because your heart won't allow you to, give yourself gratitude for taking this time for yourself that day that you came to practice with me for our grief workout. Be grateful to yourself and whoever made this possible for you to do, whether that's a babysitter, like I say, someone in your household, or that you just somehow saw my post and knew that I do grief. Be grateful for whatever brought you to this space right now to help you move forward. So I think mindfulness, the journaling, the gratitude, the breath work, the meditation, the movement, the
Nature.
rest, nature, all of that is very important for grieving. And I'm glad you said the nature thing, because you know what? I haven't really emphasized that as part of the grief practice, but I will. So whoever takes my grief next, we have Stephanie to thank for that, because we will be incorporating, I guess the closest I've been to that in my own practice, actually, I have an herbalist, and she's recommended different teas to use to bring down my stress. She's a PhD expert. I can't even go into that.
I
She
think we
worked
have the
me
same
through.
actually.
Elizabeth,
Yeah.
don't we love Liz? Yeah. So she helped me a lot. So that's nature, right? The herbs, the plants. So that's true. I am bringing that into my practice, but I am not knowledge. I'm not an herbalist. I could recommend to other people exactly what to drink. I could tell people what I drink and maybe take that list into their herbalist, and they'll talk it down. Because I've always used aromatherapy. Like when I found out I could drink lavender tea, I'm like, what? I always diffuse it in my,
Yes,
house and
I
spray
just
my
had it
pen.
with a Brazilian client, and she was like, "The Copaiba you I have from you, can I take it?" And I was like, "Of course you can."
Yeah, so again, yeah, so nature. So yeah, great for bringing all of that in. But I think I never answered the first question you asked me about being a yoga person. Because I went the long way around the way to say, okay, I got the certification, not with the goal to be a yoga teacher, but then how the divine works. My mentor said, okay, I want you to take this additional training so that you can substitute for me when I need someone. And so the first time I could take that training was in February, following that December, I got my certification. And then I taught my first class in March. I'll never forget March 8th, because it was International Women's Day. I taught my first class. Then, and the next thing I know, I got a I was a well, they at the time there was funding with Veterans Yoga Project to pay teachers a modest fee, which just blew my mind, because I thought I can't be getting paid for doing something I love that means so important to me. I had never thought that that was going to be my route. So I, from there, figured out, okay, I have a gift. I like it. If I want to help people, when I say a gift, not like I'm like some brilliant one of these people that they're 3 years old and they're
No,
paying,
I understand. Like you
you
have
know
the
what I
gift
mean?
of being a teacher, and this is something not everyone has. And this is something that really makes me mad that nowadays, like so many, and I mean, I'm a white woman, so I'm very, very confident to say this, that many white women are just like, oh, I just went to Peru and it is ayahuasca thing, and now I'm a shaman. Like, what the f No, you're not, because you took a weekend course. You're not a shaman. You're not a healer. You're just a person that's kind of crazy. Sorry for stating all that this harsh, but this is how I feel about it.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And so then I thought, like I found my calling. And again, sometimes, I can talk to you, you're like, you're a kindred spirit. But a calling, I finally know what a calling is because I can be good at a lot of things. I'm lucky I was good at a lot of things. I'm lucky my parents made sure I was well educated and as an adult, multiple degrees, university degrees, traveled to 45 different countries, dabbled in different languages. You could be good, love to cook, love to sew, love to do this, have blah, blah, blah. Great at a lot of things, writing and all these things. But I don't ever felt this is the first thing I felt like I've been called to do, and that is help people with their grief. Called to do that. So then when I figured that out, I said, well, if you're called to do that, you're gonna have to be a yogapreneur because how is anybody gonna find you? So, not that I have figured that out completely, but then that started. Well, you know what? I have a podcast. Hopefully, I'm reaching people that way. I don't monetize it. I have a social media presence, so I put things out there. But I tell you, I teach 3 days a week and get zero money. Two of them are with Veterans Yoga Project. I do it as a volunteer. That is one job I would do. I hope everybody has a job they would do for free because we love it. That's mine. And then one that I teach through yoga specialists, which is connected where I got my training, and that's donation based. I've had one former teacher come and give me a donation, and I have another regular student. He's a fellow student. I probably would not accept his donation, even if he gave it to me. He's helped me in a lot of ways. He's a ritual guy. And it also gives me the opportunity to hone my craft because those are alternating yoga nidra and yin yoga classes. And I use them on my podcast. So it's win-win for me. And I want to make yoga accessible. I believe in that. I don't want to make my money. Like, I shouldn't say that. Gosh, where's some wood? I'm knocking on wood. I'm not superstitious, but I never want to block out the potential blessings. I believe the universe hears that and will say, why are you blocking your blessings? But I am proud and happy to offer donation-based classes and free classes with veterans and be part of the free online class platform the Veterans Yoga Project provides because it should be accessible to everyone. I'm proud of that. When I work one-on-one, and I teach general classes, when I say general, I lead a meditation, I do the yin yoga, the yoga nidra, and I do a gentle yoga class. But when I work one-on-one with clients, that's different. They have come to me because they have a specific problem that they need help solving, and that's where people are willing and happy to part with their money joyfully and gleefully. And that's where I'm happy to accept it and provide that service that they need. So that's where I have to be the yogipreneur there. How do I reach those people that need my help? So I have to put on that businesswoman hat, get over the icky part of it, figure out how to do it from a heart-centered place. Don't even like the word saying selling my services. Offering, I need to get out of that selling. People are there to buy. You've got a solution, right? When have I ever hesitated to fairly compensate anyone who's going to solve, whether it's my hair, my dentist, if I'm buying a pair of shoes, the restaurant, why should I be any different? I do not want to be one of these people. And I've seen them, maybe you've seen them, that are super, super what's the word, salesy? Like, I'm not promising you.
Yeah,
It's
like
not,
people who are
you know what
offering
I mean?
something and you don't really see a product. Like it's just be in my energy. And I mean, I'm really, you don't have to exchange always money. It also can be exchange of energy. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not taking money from you to be in my podcast. You didn't take money from me to be in your podcast. We're exchanging energies and we're totally fine with this. But the point, you're taking money, like, just you need to have a product, you need to have a service, you need to have something you give. No, it's not just, I mean, if not, it's a donation.
It is. It's a donation. And I also want to be able to offer a service that I truly feel is heartfelt. Like, I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't offer the yoga for grief. I also have two other niches. I'm focusing initially on the grief, but I call release the shame and anger that comes from sexual trauma, right? Because that's what's helped keep me sane a lot of times. And then the third is age better with yoga for women over 50, because that's who I am. My niches are, I'm all three women,
I
right?
don't believe
Grieving.
that you're over 50. I'm sorry.
Another reason I love you and we get on so well. But, so I am that woman, and I am that woman. So I don't, you know, I survived menopause. You know, I've got aging parents. I know what it's like to be a caregiver and from abroad. You know, my husband's got grandkids. You know, I am that woman that wants to age better. You know, I am that woman who is still dealing with the PTS that comes from sexual trauma. And I don't think you ever get rid of PTS. I think you learn how to manage,
Yes.
right? And you learn how to conquer it so that it doesn't drive you and that that's not your only narrative. And I am that one who's gonna, you know, dealing with grief. And, you know, as long as you live in love, you're gonna have grief. This isn't gonna be the last time I deal with grief. So I feel totally genuine and confident when I say these tools have worked with me. I'm living proof. Of course, I customize it based on what you need. Let's try different things. You know, you fine tune it as you go along. I want at least a 12-week, 3-month commitment. Because, you know, Stephanie, when you're doing these practices, you can't just journal one day and everything, right? You can't just do
Yeah,
something
I
one time.
totally understand. This is why when I am offering my mentorship, and I totally understand. Some people just need, like, give me some tips. I can do it on my own. And I mean, many are coming back, but it's another story. But that's absolutely fine. Like, I'm a person like this. Like, I'll first want to try it on my own, and this is absolutely fine. But when I'm really holding a container, I'm like, at least we have to work with each other for 4 weeks because I will help you to go into a feminine way of working. So, what is really a part of being feminine, of being a woman in your working day, is to have a look how your cycle is going. So, our cycle is around 5 weeks, 4 weeks, I'm sorry, sometimes 5 weeks. Yeah, at least we have to work for 4 weeks together. So, I can absolutely agree on that. There is some process that is needed.
There is. There's, you need the consistency. You need to build the muscle. You need to build a commitment. And if you show up every week at our designated time for 3 months, you're going to be okay, right? You're on your way. You have proven to yourself that you want to do it. You decide after that if you want to go further. Of course, there are going to be some weeks you need to change the schedule. Things come up. Maybe you miss a week. That's okay. But if you come back that next week, you know, so that's and part of that for me is hopefully, as you say, you've got the tools that you need after, because you're going to have to keep doing it. It's not going to be done in 3 months anyway. You
Yes.
have to keep doing it. So you're going to have to keep doing it for the rest of your life. At least that's been my experience, because life keeps coming for you, Stephanie. It keeps coming for us. You know, if it's
Yes,
not
it's
one
there.
thing, it's there. And that's the wonderful thing about life. Is how we process these things that come to us. It wouldn't be a life if nothing was happening, right? We're not clustering ourselves away like nuns or monks, right? We're in the real world, so things happen. There's always going to be some crisis in the world, that makes it very hard for us, I think, as individuals. We're so connected to the news cycles. We've taken on so much stress that that's not even ours to own or process. And don't be an empathetic person like we are. You know, it can really do yourself in and do some harm. So I think we all need those mindfulness practices, like the breathing, just to have it in a morning routine, taking time. So if you're doing that while you're managing grief or PTS after a sexual assault or dealing with menopause or caregiving, those tools become even more important. And I think it becomes even more necessary that you have that time for you. That's why I'm really, really, really going to. This conversation has been so good for me because it reminds me how much I thrive when I have a strong morning routine. Because if I do that first thing, putting on that meditation music, maybe, you know, doing some, maybe some nidra, morning nidra, maybe a little bed yoga, then having my tea before my writing in my gratitude journal, and then going down for breakfast, you feel invincible. Like something's coming up, and like, that's okay. You know, that's okay. Not that, because it's definitely not going to prevent anything bad from happening, but it's going to amp up your ability to respond instead of react. And that has been one of my weaknesses as a human being, responding instead of, I'm sorry, reacting instead of responding. And by responding, I mean taking that deep breath, soaking it in. First of all, evaluating, do I even need to respond? Do I even need to say anything to this? Just because it happened or this person said something to me doesn't mean that I even have to acknowledge it or say something. Whereas react, you just like instinctively push back or feel as if, you know, that fight or flight comes in, you immediately want to fight. So that to me is one of the greatest lessons of this practice that we call everything that's encompassed, what we call yoga, the whole practice of the mindfulness thing, whether it's because I have a yoga practice, a mindfulness practice, it means you have to practice, right? So that means you have to do it. So that means you have to stop what you're doing and do that. So that's a huge gift. And for all, and, you know, and sometimes that seems so impossible because when do you have time? And that's where I find you have that strong morning practice. That's the time. That's the time. Because if you wait and say, I'm going to do it at lunch or I'm going to do this, something can come up to prevent you from doing that. So I thank you for reminding me the power of just the power of what I try to have other people do. I can be better. I can be more consistent with my morning routine, especially now that my husband's retired and home all the time.
Yes, I really think that routines are a great way. And routine doesn't mean that you have to do each day the same things, but just that you're making time for yourself and then you can decide whatever you want to do. So the routine would be making time and not necessarily, I don't know, waking up at seven o'clock. Okay, opening my eyes, going to the bathroom, brushing my teeth. Like, no, this is not military. Like, this is
It's
not
not
military.
military. And you know what? I think that's why I probably initially had resistance to that, because it is, you don't want to be regimented. And I admire those women that do it. I believe it was in Michelle Obama's biography, Becoming, where when her children were very, very young, the babies, they were babies, very young, she said, you know, I really needed to do something for myself. So she wanted to go to the gym in the morning. She said, but I thought, well, what's going to happen? You know, if the girls need me, then she said, she realized their father, they have a perfectly good father. You know, he can do it. If he's one of those women, because she had a high powered job that would be like at the gym at 4 in the morning. I'm like, okay, I'm not that kind of person. But good for her. But knowing that if she didn't do that for herself, she wasn't going to be good and showing up for anybody else. So I, again, last summer was crap. I wasn't showing up for myself. And I was still even more in my grief, or it's more closer to it. You know, as every day goes by, you get further away from it in time, not necessarily in heart, but it still felt raw. So that's, you've helped me remember that as much as I want to help others and serve others, I have to make sure I'm pouring into myself regularly and generously, and not be afraid to say no to those invitations, even if it's from, you can delay an invitation by 30 minutes. If somebody says, let's do this, you can, that you want to be on the yoga mat that time, you could delay it by 30 minutes and people will be okay with that. But I often let things like that, the desire, gosh, I can't believe I'm dragging, made me realize this too, maybe the desire to please or to get along, put my own well-being on the back burner. So gone are those days that that's not necessary to do. But sometimes it seems easier just to roll with, yeah, okay, I can do this at 3 o'clock. When you know in your mind that's the time you plan to be on the yoga mat. So I often do that and say, oh, it's okay, I can do it later. Do it now because you don't know what's going to come later.
Yes, I think like the do it now, put yourself first is a perfect sentence or two perfect sentences to for now end this conversation, even though I would love to chat with you about this for 5 hours more. So you're very welcome to come back on this podcast. I will be very happy to have you again and to speak more about being a yogipreneur, about yoga for grief. But now I need to do a very last, but maybe the most important question. Where do we find you and how can we work with you?
Bless your heart. Before I forget, I'd love to have you back on the Yoga Saves Me podcast. And your water flow practice that you offered was so generous and amazing. So more of that. And you can find me, if you go to Linktree, what is it? Linktr.ee, do the forward slash, always home yoga, lowercase. You'll find my website, my Instagram, the podcast, and possibly even a link to sign up for weekly grief support emails. If you sign up for those, you get a free yin yoga practice that I recorded that I use a lot. And you can find me trolling, not trolling, stalking Stephanie on Instagram too. You'll see me here there on her life. So if you're following Stephanie, you'll see me pop in and out of her feed there. And I just want to thank you so much for today. This was like therapy for me today. Thank you so much, Stephanie. Dankeschön.
Yes, danke schön an dich. Thank you. And I will put the link into the description of this episode so we can find you with just one click because we're all lazy. I know that. We just want to have it with one click. It's absolutely fine because you need to or you want to make time for your yoga practice. I get it. So I will put the link into the description. And Adrienne, it was a pleasure like always. And I can't wait to have you back and to be back in your podcast. And for now, I wish you a wonderful day and thank you, thank you, thank you so, so much for being here. And you're such a lovely person. I love you.